Hello, my name is Anthony Patch, and this is another edition of Pulse. Today is the 29th of November, 2024, and the title of this presentation is the 1997 Treaty on Friendship between Russia, the Russian Federation, and Ukraine. I will be reading from Wikipedia some of the source material on this, but before I get into the specifics of this treaty, I want to review with you the goals, the specifications that were issued back in 2021 by Russia to the West, to Ukraine, to NATO, to the United States. The terms for bringing about peace at the beginning of what Russia has referred to as the special military operation. The goals are as follows. There's 5 points here from the Russian perspective. That Ukraine maintain as a sovereign nation their neutrality. Number two, that they do not join as a member, that they join NATO at any point. Number three, demilitarization of their standing army. Number four, denazification within the entire country. And number five, peaceful relationships with the Russian Federation. As I often do in our live streams that we produce 3 times a week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, generally anywhere from 1.5 to 2 hours in length, each of our 3 live streams, that are accessible if you care to join as a member, accessible through anthonypatch.com. What is going on now, I'd like to deliver, as I often do in these live streams, the punchline right up front, and then we'll backfill the information supporting that headline or punchline. Russia, based upon the treaty that I'm going to illustrate for you, that I've really not heard mentioned, alternative media, mainstream media coverage, I really don't hear anyone making reference to this 1997 treaty, which obviously has been violated, hence that may be the reason. But there are several agreements or proposed agreements that have been violated since 1997 between Ukraine and the Russian Federation. What is going on right now, the punchline is that Russia is actually retaking their territory. This could be regarded as territory that existed under the previous form of government within Russia and Ukraine, obviously the Soviet Union. However, the basis for Ukraine and the borders, and this is what's really important to understand, the borders as delineated, as agreed upon, were prescribed in this 1997 treaty. The 5 points that I just outlined to you, neutrality, lack of NATO membership, demilitarization, denazification, and peaceful relationships, that reflects the treaty on friendship that was signed, ratified, fully ratified by both governments, Ukraine and Russia, the Russian Federation, in 1997. Thus, the violation of the treaty, or the allowance for the treaty to expire, it had built into the agreement a 10-year period of automatic extension of the treaty, reinforcement of the treaty, unless one side provided 6 months prior notice to the other that they were going to allow the treaty to expire. So an automatic renewal every 10 years since 1997. The essence of it is, should it be allowed to expire, or if the peace treaty were to be broken, obviously by military incursion military attack, special military operation. The result is, from a legal standpoint, is that the borders of Ukraine, specified in the treaty, no longer exist. So this was broken. Dissolving the borders of Ukraine, thus denying sovereignty for Ukraine. Meaning that Ukraine would automatically, upon the violation of the treaty, the breaking of the treaty, all of Ukraine, including the Donbass, including Crimea, would revert back to the prior borders. That means that Ukraine would be fully enveloped by the sovereign borders of Russia, the Russian Federation. The borders that existed at the time of the Soviet Union. Again, this is underreported and therefore not appreciated. So let's go to the heart of the matter here. I will read from Wikipedia. I always cite my sources when we're doing our reporting, so you can read this for yourself. The Treaty on Friendship, Cooperation, and Partnership between Ukraine and the Russian Federation, also known as the, quote, Big Treaty, was an agreement signed in 1997 between Ukraine and Russia, which fixed the principle of strategic partnership, the recognition of the inviolability of existing borders, that the borders could not be violated, and respect for territorial integrity and mutual commitment not to use its territory to harm the security of each other. The treaty prevents Ukraine and Russia from invading one another's country respectively and declaring war. Due to the beginning of the Russian-Ukrainian war in 2014, then Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko signed a decree not to extend the treaty on 19 September 2018. 2018 was when it was due to expire, okay? The automatic 10-year renewal that I mentioned. So, signed a decree not to extend the treaty as of 19 September 2018. The treaty consequently expired on 31 March of 2019. Until 2019, the treaty was automatically renewed on each 10th anniversary of its signing, unless one party advised the other of its intention to end the treaty 6 months prior to the date of the renewal. Russian-Ukraine relations have deteriorated since the 2014 Russian annexation of Crimea and Russian support for separatist forces in the war in Ukraine's Donbass region, and were completely severed following the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Okay, that would be in the Donbass region. The treaty was initially signed in Kiev on 31 May 1997 by the then president of Ukraine, Leonid Kuchma, and Russian president at that time, Boris Yeltsin. In Ukraine, the treaty was ratified by the Law of Ukraine, number 13-98-VR, on 14 January 1998, on ratification of the Treaty of Friendship, Cooperation, and Partnership between Ukraine and the Russian Federation. In Russia, on 25 December 1998, the State Duma and the Federal Assembly adopted a resolution on the adoption of the federal law on ratification of the Agreement of Friendship, Collaboration, Partnership between Russian Federation and Ukraine, and directed it to the Federation Council. The Federation Council approved this federal law by the resolution on 17 February 1999. The treaty was ratified. The document superseded the previous treaty between the Russian Soviet Federative Socialist Republic and the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic of 19 November 1990 before the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Okay, so there's more here. I don't want to take the time to read the entire presentation from Wikipedia, but that's the gist of the matter. The borders were agreed upon in a treaty. Ukraine allowed the treaty to expire, giving notice to the Russian Federation that it would be allowed to expire. So this set the stage for this conflict. And certainly we have the annexation of Crimea. That's been hotly contested between Ukraine and the Soviet Union. It's beyond the scope, or not Soviet Union, but Russian Federation, beyond the scope of this brief presentation here today. But it should be appreciated that what Russia is doing now, and I was going to call this, title this presentation, the Oreshnik strategy. So let's kind of look at that strategy. Let's look at this, yes, from a tactical standpoint, the employment of the Oreshnik intermediate range, but a modified ICBM to deliver at a shorter range a hypersonic weapons package, multiple warheads. You have a situation now where virtually Russia can act with impunity, meaning there's no defense. There's no ability to intercept air, you know, from ground-based missiles or air-to-air missiles to intercept this hypersonic weapon. So understanding that this is truly a game changer from a military and political, geopolitical, global perspective, this is a game changer. So I'll just go very briefly through some of these points. In my live stream on Sunday, I'm going from a biblical perspective, from a faith-based perspective that I really can't share here due to community guidelines that we adhere to on YouTube. But on Sunday, I'll give you the biblical perspective on what I'm about to lay out from a secular perspective. And that is that because there is no defense against this weapons system, Russia, should it choose to be imperialist, aggressive, could use this virtually anywhere in the world. But at this point, it appears to be restricted, codified, if you will, for use in Ukraine. Understanding that this weapon system can be used in Ukraine, in Europe, against the United States, etc., it's not so much a threat as it illustrates the point that I began with sharing the historical treaty with you, such that now it may explain, may give some insight into the thinking of the military and political leadership, and I would say perhaps many of the population of the Russian Federation, such that they view this as, okay, the treaty was disbanded by the decision taken by the Ukrainian government, and it was clearly delineated in the treaty that should the treaty be dissolved, that Ukraine would return, we can call it ownership, if you will, it would be returned to the Russian Federation. That the borders are dissolved, the sovereignty is deleted by their own actions. From a political and military standpoint, if you look at the actions by the Ukrainian government, that is precipitating a conflict, because now you have territory that is disputable territory. When borders are not legally defined and internationally recognized, then you have contention for the land between the two territories, the Russian Federation and the Ukrainian territories. So I'm not trying to point fingers, I'm not trying to lay blame, I'm simply reporting on history to perhaps give us a better understanding of what is going on here, because when we look at now the Oreshnik strategy, And it's been reported yesterday and today, there are warnings, leaflets and warnings that have gone out to the civilian population and by extension the military and the political leadership in Ukraine that Russia intends to use the Oreshnik again, this time on the capital city of Kiev. But Russia wants to minimize casualties. Whether they're military or civilian, they want to send a message without killing a lot of people. It is also being reported today that the bulk of, I would say the entirety, of the leadership of the Ukrainian government, including their Supreme Court, are now occupying underground bunkers, deep underground bunkers, because of this impending attack on Kiev. Because of this weapons system that really, with impunity, meaning there's really no consequence, there's no military rebuttal to the use of this weapon system on the part of Russia, this then demonstrates that Russia is going to not only stop where they are, which is what most in the West are assuming, that Russia is really not going to advance westward towards Europe any further. The propaganda that's been put out by the West is that indeed that has always been the intention of the Russian Federation. And if we don't stop Russia, the West perspective, if we don't stop Russia in Ukraine, they'll continue to advance and take Europe, which in my view is pure propaganda. However, we do need to appreciate that because they're legally, and this is international law, there are no legal borders delineating the Ukrainian territory. It has already reverted to Russian ownership. Therefore, there will be a continued advance, but it will not necessarily be an advance of conflict. I believe that this recent information regarding the Ukrainian government, which again, from a legal standpoint, there is no legally recognized governmental body in Ukraine. Okay? Zelensky is not a duly elected president. Okay? His term expired. Here's what I'm illustrating to you today, briefly. As the Ukrainian troops learn of this recent announcement that the leadership has gone underground, this has a tremendous psychological effect, an effect on morale, such that I'm anticipating the Ukrainian troops to lay down their arms if they're in the Kursk region, which is in the recognized, if you will, the recognized region, the territory of the Russian Federation. They will lay down their arms and surrender. I do not expect that Russia is going to take them prisoner. Maybe briefly detain them, but nonetheless, I don't see them being taken away to prison camps and the like. Now, apart from the territory of the Kursk region, what remains of Ukraine to the Western European border that Ukraine is occupying, those military troops, I believe, will lay down their arms, because Putin in a press conference today said they are not firing, presently, they are not firing weapons man to man, troop to troop, so rifle to rifle, at Ukrainian troops unless the Russian forces are first fired upon. Okay? This is sending a message to the Ukrainian troops. Lay down your arms. We have no beef with you. Surrender and return to your homes. Lay down your arms. You don't need to surrender to us as Russian forces. Turn around, leave the front lines, return to your homes. That's the message that I believe the Russian forces are telegraphing on the battlefield to the Russian forces. And again, they learning that their leadership has gone underground, essentially surrendering to the Oreshnik system, they're going to give up. And this special military operation, from a shots fired from a direct conflict perspective, will cease, but Russia will then continue to move westward without a shot fired, move westward and regain, from a legal standpoint, their territory. Now, Putin has said many times over the last nearly 3 years, he has no desire, no intention militarily to take all of Ukraine. But we also need to understand that there was a red line that was crossed when the West authorized the use of ATACMS, long-range missiles, Storm Shadow long-range missiles, not once, but twice now. Once, and then Russia followed with the first launch, and so far only launch, of the Oreshnik hypersonic system. But then the West chose to continue with long-range missile, 190 miles. It's really an intermediate-range missile, but the media calls it long-range. We'll leave it at that. But they followed up with another strike using missiles into Russian territory. So now Russia has said, okay, everybody leave Kiev. We're going to use the Oreshnik again. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a time of our choosing. And once we determine that there will be a minimum of casualties, we are going to drop the hypersonic system on Kiev. Again, this will demoralize the Ukrainian troops. There no doubt will be the message reinforced from the Russian Federation to those troops to lay down their arms and return home. I anticipate this is going to happen over the next few days. This isn't, you know, the end of the year. This isn't once Donald Trump is sworn in as the new president here. This is in the next few days, because the warning has been given to Kiev that this is imminent, okay? So I want to go just back again, just to review, and then we'll conclude. I want to go back to Wikipedia. Until 2019, the treaty was automatically renewed on each 10th anniversary of its signing unless one party advised the other of its intention to end the treaty 6 months prior to the date of the renewal. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko signed a decree not to extend the treaty. He issued that decree on 19 September of 2018. The treaty consequently expired on 31 March 2019. It's important to bear that 2019 date in mind. That was the date that Ukraine, from a legal standpoint, and this is international law, ceased to exist as a sovereign nation. Therefore, from strictly a legal perspective, the Russian Federation has every legal right, I'm not taking sides, but they have every legal right to reoccupy all of Ukraine. And I see every indication, peacefully, that this is what Russia will do. They will go all the way to the western border and declare Ukraine as Russia, part of the Russian Federation. It will become a state of the Federation. Now, I want to view this from a positive perspective as I end. We know that most of the Russian electrical grid and much of its power generation capacity has been destroyed in this conflict. There are many people that will flee as winter takes hold in Ukraine, will flee into Europe. European nations do not want this to occur. I think it's to the people of Russia, to the Russian benefit, as well as that by secondary influence, to the benefit of Europe, and if we need to, the benefit of NATO, to allow Russia to peaceably occupy all of Ukraine, establish peace, and be able to rebuild that electrical infrastructure, water and sewage infrastructure, food logistical supply infrastructures before winter really grips Ukraine. From strictly a humanitarian perspective, this makes all the sense in the world to allow Russia to do this. And again, legally, they have a right to do this. And Putin and his government, their statements have reflected, Lavrov and others have reflected, they want to minimize casualties. So, moving back to this 1997 treaty, provides the impetus for peace to once again be achieved in Ukraine. And it also meets the goals. Neutrality of Ukraine, because Ukraine as a sovereign state would not exist. It would be Russian Federation territory. So there's no need for neutrality, but in essence, it achieves the same purpose. It means that Ukraine will never be a member of NATO because it's Russian territory. There will be no Ukrainian military. There's no need. There is a Russian military. And there will be peace. Now, the denazification aspect, well, that's up to the Russian leaders to work through that problem. But I think many of those individuals so designated as that will flee of their own accord. And perhaps much of, if not all, of the so-called Ukrainian government leadership, Zelensky included, I think if they're smart, they will reach out to the Russian Federation and ask to be allowed to peaceably leave Ukraine of their own accord. I pray that that's the way it works out, that peace is achieved. I'm not going to go to the negative side, the worst case scenario, that is self-evident and self-explanatory. But I wanted to bring to your attention the previous existence of this treaty that still, even though it has been broken back in 2019 by Ukraine, the result of the dissolution of that treaty resulted back in 2019 that Ukraine would return to the former Soviet Union, which of course is the Russian Federation. We shall see if this ever comes to light in terms of the scenario that I've offered, but this information on the treaty and its consequences, to the positive I view it, ever sees the light of day. But thank you for your time and your attention. Again, remember anthonypatch.com. The information's all linked below. I invite you to a learning environment devoid of hysteria and sensationalism, where we examine from a critical thinking perspective the events that are taking place around the world, both from a secular as well as a biblical, scriptural, faith-based perspective. It's an environment that many people have taken advantage of and enjoy. Many people have been with us since 2014. So, thank you again for your time. And God bless you all.